This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Ohio native Tom Baddock's comic strips have appeared in newspapers for decades, and as time passes, his characters have grown up with him. Now his Funky Winker Bean comic is celebrating its 50th year, and Baddock has announced that on December 31st, the gang will retire from syndication. Joining me to talk about his work and how he's kept Funky and Friends relevant for 50 years is Funky Winker Bean and Kraft Shank creator Tom Baddock. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Do you have any Funky Winker Bean favorites? You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. So, Funky Winker Bean began in 1972. You were a middle school teacher when you started creating these comics. Talk about kind of your origin story. Did you always know that this is what you wanted to do, what you were meant to do?
Yeah, for some reason I did. It was from a very young age. I mean, I was like in the fourth or fifth grade making comics, and I knew I wanted to be a comic book artist because there was one day there's a sort of a road to Damascus moment where I walk into this Rexall drugstore and I pull up an issue of The Flash, and it totally rearranged my molecules, and I just was doing it. You know, that's what it was going to be. So that was my intent, and I took art at Kent State University, and when I graduated, I actually flew to New York that summer to try to get a job at Marvel Comics or at DC Comics, and I got turned down in both places, and rightfully so. I think my portfolio was filled more with nerve than anything else, but I came back home, and I still wanted to do, I thought maybe to build a resume, I don't know, but I went to the local paper to see if I could get a job, maybe doing some cartooning, some spot art or something like that. And I walk in the door just when the editor is developing something they had called the Tuesday Teen page. And I have a sketchbook, and it's full of kids in school and stuff. And I just put funny little captions and balloons on them. So I never thought about writing humor. Like I say, I wanted to do Spider-Man. He looked at the book and he said, you know, we have this Tuesday Teen page. Would you like to do a cartoon for it once a week? I said, absolutely. And so I walked out with my first cartoon gig, and it was good. And it was a great on the job training for me.
Yeah, I know you've written about some of your very early influences. Talk to us about the Phantom Empire and what that meant for your beginnings in this business.
That's strange. That's really weird. I mean, I'm in Akron, Ohio, going to Krause Elementary School. And every Friday, if you brought in a dime, you could go see a movie serial. They showed different serials, and they showed a chapter each week. And one of them was The Phantom Empire, and it was this movie with Gene Autry and at Radio Ranch. And then they also had this underground scientific city of Murania, and these guys would ride out from it with these they dressed almost like knights and these swords that shot lightning and stuff. And it was, I look at it and it was like it genres did not matter to this movie. And it was mind blowing, and people, you know, most people look at that and they go, "Boy, this is quite a mess." And I'm looking at it, "Wow, who knew? This is so good."
And so, how do you draw a line from that to Funky Winker Bean?
Well, I think it instilled in me a desire to want to create. My like I say, I comic books and comic strips in the newspaper were really, just a huge influence, and so I wanted to do that. And so that's really the through line that just carried forward for me. And that movie, it was just another example of watching, you know, exploding your imagination for you. And it was just, it was inspiring.
Yeah. You launched Funky Winker Bean, as I mentioned, in 1972. I remember reading it back in the day in the Cincinnati Enquirer. It hasn't appeared there for a while. I know it does still appear in the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Columbus Dispatch. But I love the strip from the moment I saw it, and I love the name. Have to confess, I have a cat named Funky Winker Bean. So I need to ask you, where did this name come from?
Well, I was, when I was putting the strip together, I took a lot of characters from either college friends and students and stuff. And so my one roommate in college was named Tom Dickerson. We called him TD. So I was going to call the strip TD. And when we were getting ready to go, the syndicate informed me. They said, well, there's a strip called Doonesbury, and there's a character called BD, and we don't want any kind of confusion. So you're going to have to come up with another name. So I went to my classes the next day and just handed out sheets of paper. And I said, just write down anything you think is an interesting or funny name. And I did that in all my classes, brought them all home. And my wife, Kathy, and I sat down at the dining room table, or the kitchen table, actually, in our apartment, and just went through all of them. Somebody at one point had written down Funky. And somewhere else, someone had written down Winkerbean. And in a brilliant stroke, or maybe not so brilliant, we called it Funky Winkerbean. And I mean, the name has been sort of a blessing and a curse ever since, because considering where I took the work and the direction I took it, it became something different. And the name seemed a little odd juxtaposed next to some of the stories I would later do.
Sure. Well, and I want to talk about that, too. You know, it started as, I guess, what's called kind of a gag a day strip, was that kind of format for many years. Talk to us about the challenge of that and then how you decided to kind of evolve your storytelling over time.
Well, yeah, it just started as a gag a day. And that's good because that's what I was doing in the Chronicle, in the Chronicle Telegram, the paper that was printing my cartoons once a week. And, you know, so that's how you develop and kind of get into it. And it's sort of like you sort of graduate from that then to smaller stories, and you kind of go to sitcoms. So I would have the band director and the football coach wanting to use the football field at the same time. So that's a week, you know, and that would just develop into a little story for me. Didn't do many more extended stories like that until I did a thing with a girl in high school who became pregnant. And that girl was Lisa. And in writing that story, I kind of moved from sitcoms to a little bit more of a movie where you don't have to have a joke every second. You're telling a story, and the humor changed. It went from, like you said, gags to a more behavioral kind of humor that grew out naturally out of the way people interact.
Hmm. And, you know, you mentioned teen pregnancy, which was I'm imagining a pretty controversial decision to bring that onto the funny pages, so to speak, back then. What kind of reaction did you get to that?
Well, it was interesting, you know, because the normal reaction in those days, in those early 70s, if you took something into a newspaper that was controversial, it's like, in fact, I did take something. I had written something about a pregnant teen, but it was a one-off, and I'm glad they didn't use it. It was a joke, and I wouldn't have wanted that done. But they said, no, you can't do this. You know, this isn't allowed. So when I came up with the teen pregnancy storyline, I did a lot of work, and I had people over to the house, and we were looking at strips, and we're pulling strips and culling it down to a solid week. And then I flew out to the syndicate, which was in California at that point, and pitched it. And I said, this is what I want to do. I think we can do this. And they got behind it. And what they did was put together a package where there was like sidebar stories about teen pregnancy, all the kind of information that an editor might want to kind of talk about what I was doing. And it worked. And we had requests for over 60,000 booklets. And then we actually went back for another reprinting later. So that was, it was eye-opening because it showed me that the medium I worked in was capable of carrying the weight of ideas like that. And it also showed me that there was an appetite in the audience for stuff that was a little more substantive. And that just kind of started me down the road. And it led to the one big thing that really made the change in Funky. Les, when Lisa was pregnant, he had gotten back together with her, and he was her birthing partner as she went through this. And having had him go through that experience, it was going to be impossible to take him back to the gym and have him get stuck on the gym rope. He had grown up. He'd moved forward. I was growing up. And so at that point, I decided to make the first time jump because it just made sense to take my characters where they seemed to be wanting to go.
Hmm. We're talking about the Funky Winkerbean comic strip with its creator, Tom Baddock, who's also the creator of Crankshaft. You can join the conversation and share your funky favorites by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Let's talk more about that time jump. That was a pretty innovative decision, wasn't it? I mean, you jumped not only past high school, you jumped past college. You took your characters to young adulthood. Can you talk to us about sort of that decision and the process?
Yeah, it was interesting. And again, I wrote that stuff off to the side of the strip for a long time, just sort of try to pull it together and pull the best stuff I could together, and then did the same things, ran it by people, kind of showed them what I was doing. So that when I went to the syndicate, I was presenting them with a fairly complete package, almost complete. I remember one conversation I had with the promotion director at King Features. And, you know, I'm telling him, well, you know, Crazy Harry's going to be a mailman, and Les is going to be an English teacher, and Bull's going to be a football coach. And he says, what's happening with Funky? And I said, well, yeah, it's funny you should ask that question, because I'm not really sure. And then his voice kind of changed from Bruce Wayne to Batman. It was like, when will you be sure? And I said, I'll call you back in half an hour. And it was probably the best, most creative half hour I ever had, because it was happening in the middle of a recession. So I thought Funky's a business major. He's going to graduate from school, not be able to get a job. So he ended up delivering pizzas for Montoni's, which was a sort of a stage I had created aside from the high school in the strip. And that just did it. Not only with him working there and eventually moving up to becoming manager and owner, it made that a second place for my adult characters to hang out. Mm. So I had the high school, I had the adult characters there. And it's probably one of the three really important stages that existed for me in Funky. The other one would be obviously Les and Lisa's house in their home.
Yeah. Talk to us about how your process has changed over these 50 years. I mean, when you started out, you were doing all the writing, all of the artwork. That's changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I'm a very slow artist, and I'm a pretty fast writer. And after about 25 years, and I'd done these time jumps and everything, the work was, the writing was getting ahead of what I could do art-wise. And it was getting to be difficult to kind of keep up with all that stuff. At the same time, I was also writing Crankshaft and working with this terrific artist, Chuck Ayers. And he was working at the Akron Beacon Journal at the same time as well. And so we sort of devised this thing. I wanted to get ahead on Funky. I wanted to get quite a bit ahead, and Crankshaft as well. So we worked it out so that if he came on and helped me with the penciling on Funky, he could leave his job at the Beacon. And that would sort of free me up to, one, do more writing, and to, you know, keep pushing things forward. So that's what we did. So Chuck basically stayed with me for the next 25 years, pretty much straight through, except for one little blip. And he really brought something to the table that allowed my writing to just go to the next floor in terms of what I could do.
Yeah. Well, and you, you know, we talked about the Funky Winkerbean strip handling teen pregnancy when your characters were in high school. You tackled some other really weighty issues, too, things like teen suicide. Once you made the jump, cancer. Talk to us about kind of going down those paths and how much research you needed to do into those topics to feel like you were handling them in the way you wanted to and in a way that was responsible.
Oh, sure. So like just picking up where I just left off, now that space was created for me. So I didn't have to write an idea that was due on Monday. We were ahead on the strip. I could come up with an idea and I could let it gestate and grow and kind of roll around in my head until I could see a way into a story like that, or I could see how what needed to be resolved, or what I needed to research, what I needed to know, what I needed to learn. And so as a young adult, I was beginning to hear of stories of family members who were dealing with cancer and friends. There was groups out there doing a great deal to raise awareness about breast cancer. So it was kind of in the zeitgeist. It was just in the air. So I had the time to let that settle and think about it until I had a good way into the story and a good story to tell.
Hmm. And that feels like a heavier responsibility than the typical comic strip. What kind of reaction did you get from your audience and the bosses at the syndicate?
Well, again, the syndicate was just massively supportive of the work, and they helped me take it to the street and to the comics page. But there was a mixed reaction, because there is a certain audience out there who defines comic strips by its term, comics, and they think that's comics are only supposed to be funny because you call them comics, and it's not really the origins of comic strips. Way back in the day, they weren't that. They told stories. They were much more adventurous in the kind of things that they would do, but they sort of devolved to gag a day strips. So I was kind of going back and kind of looking for the DNA of what early comics were like. So you have that audience to contend with. But then there was the other side too, where the reaction was just incredibly positive again. And it's probably in terms of the work I've done, the work that received the most comment and everything, and in regard to just how the readers took to it.
Yeah. And your work on cancer, I believe your character Lisa had a cancer diagnosis. She ultimately died in the comic strip. I believe you were nominated for a Pulitzer for that work, and it sounds like that had a very personal impact on some of your readers.
Yeah, it did. It actually was a Pulitzer finalist, which was pretty amazing when you think about it. When you have a comic character's eulogy done on the front page of the Plain Dealer, that's pretty amazing. That work just rose to a level, and I was in a really amazing place at that particular time where I was almost fearless. I don't know why, but for a moment I was, and I just went after it. And by the time I got to the second half of Lisa's story, I was no longer just dealing with anecdotal information or research information. I had been diagnosed with prostate cancer and dealt with that. And it was the reason I went back to Lisa's story, because I realized the first time through, I had kind of skimmed over the top of the story. And when I went back, I had much different experiences. And when I drew on those experiences, I think it really deepened the work.
Hmm. Now, and then you had another time jump after Lisa's death. How did you decide how far you jump in time and where you wanted to pick up with your characters?
Well, the reason I did that time jump, one, because I didn't seem to have, there's a beautiful strip out there, Gasoline Alley, and those characters just like would change every single day. I don't know how he did that. So I had to make these artificial jumps. And at that point, I wanted to do it because I didn't want to have a year of mourning dealing with Lisa's passing. So I wanted to jump to a point after that where her daughter had grown up. And I mean, that's still a part of the story. In fact, one of the first things I did was a Lisa's Legacy run that they had established for cancer research. So, and it was actually one in the real world too, which was incredibly cool to think that you could step from the comics page and maybe actually impact somebody's life with what was going on in their life with the cancer. It was just it took me to a point where I didn't have to, like I say, spend a lot of time mourning for Lisa, and I could look at how she contributed to people's lives.
Yeah. I mentioned you've announced that you're going to close out Funky Winkerbean, the comic strip, on December 31st. Was that a tough decision to make after 50 years with these characters?
Sure. But Funky has no succession plan. I had nothing in place. I had taken it to a point where I really doubt that anyone else could have done it quite the exact way I've done it. They probably could have done a good strip, but not, my strip. And my strip is very personal, and these characters also along the way have been so good to me that I owed them to treat their exit from the papers thoughtfully and try to do the best job I could for it, rather than just let it sort of crash into the wall. And so I came to the decision to end Funky, and the nice thing, one of the things it affords me is that I now have time. If I stay well and everything works out, I'll be able to finish the complete Funky volumes that the Kansas State University Press is bringing out. And so then I will be able to, you know, encapsulate the whole strip in that way. And that's a real joy to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I know you haven't wanted to give any spoilers about how the strip ends, but it sounds like you also might have some guest appearances from Funky characters in your crankshaft strip. So I guess we might see some friends from the Funky gang in the future.
Oh, I can say definitely that's going to happen. The second to last week of the year is a big crossover between Funky and Crankshaft involving all of the characters. And then it rolls into these two Sunday strips that kind of just set everything up. The Funkyverse and the Crankshaft universe have always kind of existed in the same place. And so I'm going to be... The Funky characters will still be making appearances going forward in the Crankshaft, which is very satisfying for me, and I hope for the readers too. Yeah.
So it's not goodbye forever. It's just we'll see you on another part of the Funny Pages.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not leaving the carousel. I'm just letting it slow down just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you have certainly earned it. I've been talking with Funky Winkerbean and Crankshaft creator Tom Baddick. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, and I'm not going to tell my cat, Funky Winkerbean, that the comic strip is ending. So I hope he's not listening to this right now.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Assistant producer is Nick Swartzell. Technical director is Derek Smith. And I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you'll tune in with us Monday. We'll have our tomorrow for our news review show, and we have the top headlines for this week's news. And stay tuned for next week when our coverage continues. Thank you so much.